Hey, Roberto. It is now season three.
Yes,
finally here.
It is. We're finally in present time, present place. We have made it to season three. Kind of crazy. Kind of interesting that this is a. Have they confirmed this is going to be the last season, or is that still up in the air?
I think that's still up in the air. That's still a rumor.
I mean, because I don't only because I've seen episode one, and I know you've definitely gone further than episode one as of this recording. I want to say this funny story because I wanted to tell you this when we were started up, but so season three kicks off, and we talked about this last week. Mm-hmm. That Jackie's been binging it ever since. What episode are you up to watching wise?
I finished it.
I knew it. I knew that was going to happen. I knew.
Before we even started, I finished. But it took me 5 days this time instead of just 36 hours.
Well, that's still impressive. That still requires watching a few episodes, a day.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this is the last season. Not because I don't want any more House of Cards, but because...
You don't want to see it dragged out?
I don't know how you drag it out. I mean, this is the end game. This is Frank Underwood's end game. I mean, the only thing that happens next is his downfall. There's no, like, there's nothing left. And I think this episode really exemplifies. I know we'll talk about Frank more in this episode, but when we see Frank come back into action, like, fully. Like, he is already throwing things and yelling at people and getting angry, getting to the point where I knew what was going to happen the minute he became president.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is it. This is as high as you can go in your power struggle, in your mm-hmm. power chain. And what happens next? Will he become emperor or something? Like, that's the only, that's the only last step is that he becomes Mussolini or something along those lines. And that's would completely live in the land of fantasy. And I don't see that happening. So, I mean, I don't know what they could do for another season with these characters that doesn't involve, and Frank Underwood is now ruler of the earth. You know, that's the only thing I can see, and that just doesn't work in the world of House of Cards.
Do you want me to tell you what I think?
Sure.
Because I wondered that too. And also, I went ahead... I skipped several episodes of the UK House of Cards, and after finishing this season of the US season three, after finishing that, I went over to the UK House of Cards and tried to catch up and follow where that goes, and I got to the end of that, and so I was expecting the ending of this season to be very similar to the UK season ending,
right.
But it wasn't, and there was some similarities, but it wasn't the same. So I think now, after watching this season, that there is a chance. There's definitely room for another season.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if that's what I would prefer, because I think I'm like you. Because when you have something that's going good and does so well, it's terrible when something just drags out to a point
That's the thing that, I mean, we're basing off a UK show, and one of the things that especially BBC television does and also UK seasons do, is that they have a definitive end, mm-hmm. you know? Like, House of Cards in the UK has a definitive end. It's done, you know? It ended with an ending, you know? Some of my favorite British shows, Life on Mars, Ash to Ashes, even, you know, have definitive ends. Even, like, you know, seasons of Doctor Who, and yes, Doctor Who's been going on forever, they still have definitive ends. And... I would like to see that happen with a lot more U.S. shows because, I mean, thankfully with the internet, we can at least do this, but even that internet space is getting very crowded very quickly. HBO, you know, coming into the mix, I want to make sure this series gets a closing before, you know, things get a little too costly.
And I just went over to Netflix to check out the UK House of Cards, and it was pretty much three seasons. They, you know,
yes.
I guess they call them parts.
They call it.
So it ended when this one should end.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'm not going to spoil obviously the rest of season three for you, but it could go one way or the other. This could be it.
Right.
But I definitely see a room for another season now, the way that they left this one. And, you know, and when you talk about those shows that go on, and particularly in the U.S., the worst example to me is the Walking Dead. that thing just won't die. And what they do is they end up just repeating the same story over and over.
The Walking Dead.
It's never going to die.
Yeah, that's the title. So.
Yeah. But anyways...
Let's move on to this episode. Let's move on to talking about episode 1, season 3, or chapter 27, as it's titled normally.
So let me ask you, when the episode and the season starts, the first thing we see is Frank getting out of the car and going to a grave site with some flowers.
Man, that is an opener. That is an, like, it's funny because I was thinking back to the way season 2 opened. And it's like it's definitive Frank moment. It's definitive Frank moment was, you know, looking at, you know, going to the mirror, getting the engraved things with the FU and the welcome back.
Oh, yes, that's right.
This moment too, because again, Frank is like, I gotta do this to make appearances, but I don't give a damn. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And he's just pissing on his father's grave, just like, you just did not do anything. And again, it's funny because, like, our only real connection to knowing his father for a while, at least, and I might be wrong in forgetting about it, but I think it was just simply like, oh, we knew he owned a typewriter company, and he has one.
That's true.
And now we get this whole, like, no, my father didn't do a damn thing. And
but there was, I believe it was season 1 where Frank gives that sermon or whatever to that church when some girl died, and he talks about his father and something very touching about his father, and then he turns to us and says, you know, my father was an alcoholic, a jackass or whatever, and wasn't worth anything. So that was the first time we saw that he had issues with his dad. But he must definitely have issues with his dad, and I kind of think that maybe that's part of the reason he doesn't want to have kids.
That might be it, a little bit of that. But two, he's definitely got issues with his dad about not doing anything. Like, definitely Frank has proven that he is the anti-dad, that he's the anti of his father, who is an alcoholic, who did nothing, who died pretty much alone from what he was telling us at the gravesite. Mm-hmm. And now... Frank Underwood, without an election, has become president of the United States.
And it was like he was visiting his father's grave because you know that if his father was alive, the only thing he would want his father to know is, look how successful I am, and you were worth...
Look at what I've done that you contributed nothing to.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's... I love that as an opener, because it was just like, oh, like, okay, this is the tone we're setting today. I'm in. Like, because I always like Frank being that character. Like, I've said many a times in this show, we're following the antagonist, not the protagonist of the story. Mm-hmm. And I love it when Frank gets a little just a little cruel, a little, you know, especially when he talks to the audience, especially when he breaks the fourth wall and looks at us and just says some things. Like, there's some moments in this episode. And I realize we're talking about Frank the President, that's what we're supposed to talk about, but I gotta say it nonetheless. I think he's with his vice president to his, oh God, what's the guy's name? The senator.
Donald Blythe, the new VP?
Yeah, Blythe. He looks at the camera and says, he goes, Blythe may hate me, but he's not stupid or something like that when it comes to all the different things that are being brought into it. He's like, yes, I picked Donald as my vice president. Yes, I know he completely hates my guts, but he's not stupid. You know, it's just such a funny moment of just like Frank being honest with us, because they're like, wait, what the heck is he doing back? I thought he hated you. Like, oh, right, it's politics. That all is forgiven in the end of it all.
And he says also that he could do Donald Blythe could do less damage as vice president. So basically, he's saying, you know, when you're a vice president, you have no power. You know, because that's kind of in general most of our U.S. vice presidents really are just sort of figureheads. They're there,
you know,
in case something
funny,
goes wrong.
Though, is that you can bring that up, but like Frank had power as a vice
president. I know, it was the other way around.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's sort of Frank as president for sure. I know we're just in episode one, and this episode really didn't concentrate on Frank as president. Like, that was almost the B story.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of, you know, all those things that have come up. But it's funny watching this now because, like, I had been saying before we got to season three that if Frank is president, heaven help us. Because if this happens, there's nothing, there's no more, you know, that's the ceiling. We've hit the point. Everything is done. But now that that's happened, like, you see Frank getting, like, belligerent on things. Like, he is yelling. He is, like, demanding his staff pull. He fires a guy just because things aren't getting done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We might as well make this part the Frank is president part and then move into Stamper at the end because, you know, I like it, that scene where he's got his committee of Democrats together trying to propose ways that to get his ideas, his bills across. He wants to do that America Works Act. And there's one guy, I didn't catch his last name, but he goes by Paul, and he's trying to speak up, and Frank is just belligerently tells him to shut up.
Yeah, Frank won't take anyone's guff. Frank is like, it's time to get things done because we have got to get things done because guess what, people? I'm in charge now. This is Frank's world and you all live in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so amazing to see that because I had been going, yeah, if Frank is president, all bets are off. Everything that I thought was the case is no longer the case. Anything can go. And it was pretty much that in terms of just him getting like I want this bill to pass. Like, he was like had somebody had a neck that he could choke, he would have choked it. And it's so cool to see.
Absolutely. And, you know, what was funny is as I was watching that, I was taking my first view notes, and I wrote down Game of Thrones, because when he started yelling at this guy, I think my final notes were, if this was Game of Thrones, this guy would have been beheaded. The next thing that happens is he has Remy walk up to him and say, your service is no longer needed.
Which is pretty much the equivalent of being beheaded in politics. Yeah. Like, you're no longer welcome here. Leave now. We'll send you your stuff later. It's just like, wow, this is getting serious.
Yeah, I love that.
Because even with the other kind of beeline, whole Claire is a UN ambassador, even that revolved a little bit of Frank. Like, I remember, like it's the end scene of the episode, and I know I'm jumping ahead a bit with Claire as well, but I love that scene because there's an episode Claire like is trying to become a UN ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
People are thinking, oh, you're just the first lady, and even Frank doesn't take it as seriously either.
No, I agree.
But there's a scene that I love, and it's such a powerful scene. It's at the very end. He goes, you know, because Claire is like, I'm gonna do this. I want to do this, and Frank's like, come with me.
Yeah.
You know. Let me show you how the big boys really play. And if you can take this, you're cool. Because they go into a room.
It's like the situation room, I believe.
It's the war room. It is quite literally the war room out of, Dr. Strangelove. Because this is where the president makes the call on whether or not to bomb an area.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done everything he can. Everyone's done their research. They've done their power. They've done everything to avoid to minimize, innocent casualties, all those things. And then they go, we don't know if that's a school there, if there's a school there or not, but we need you to make a decision. And Frank pushes the button.
Yeah.
And he
says to her, so do you think you could stomach it?
Yeah.
You know, and I think, well, Claire, of course she can. She knows everything else that they've had to do to get where they're at. Why would he think that she'd be too weak for that?
Because what Frank just showed at that moment isn't so much that he can, let a bomb go loose. He can let a bomb go loose and watch it remotely, knowing that destruction is happening without having any... he didn't have to flip a switch. He didn't have to, drop the bomb himself. he just boop hit a button, and what she says, like, can you stomach it? Because you and I have seen Claire at her weakest, at her, like, she's crying and stuff like that.
That's true.
You know, let's put Frank on front right now. Frank's killed somebody, killed two somebodies. Get where he's at. Frank don't care.
Yeah.
Claire still has a conscience, I think. I think Claire still has a little bit of a conscience somewhere in her, because she still feels bad. You know, she still feels remorse for actions. Whereas it's very obvious that when Frank hit that button, he didn't feel remorse, because it wasn't. He didn't hesitate that much. He just kind of thought about it, hit the button, watched it, walked away. You know, didn't make a, you know, heaven help us or may God have mercy on our souls. You know, just like, done. Let's move on. You know, someone had to kill the dog. Somebody had to do it, and that's the kind of character Frank is.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting, you know, as the show progresses. Obviously, the UN on her becoming an ambassador, that definitely is going to play a big role. And you know, you can tell that there's going to be a conflict with Kathy Durant, who's the Secretary of State. Obviously, she's afraid that Claire is going to walk all over her, and she's going to take away her power as Secretary of State.
Because that is what Claire has done.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Claire continues to do. I guess I'm really curious. If I'm curious about anyone come season three, how they're going to develop, it's Claire for sure.
Yeah.
Because she could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, I know where Frank's going. I know exactly where Frank's going, and it's very apparent, you know, with his character of, like, when everything collapses, when all this falls apart, you know, Frank is going to be the one that's going to, you know, burn, for lack of better words.
Yep.
Claire still has an out, and I'm curious as to what her out's going to be.
Yep.
Do you want to start talking about Stamper? But before we move on, we got to at least thank some people and awesome people. And those people are UK2.net. They cover all the bandwidth costs and hosting for all the shows here in the British Tech Network. They can hook you up with web addresses, help build your website, give you all the tools you need to help manage the way your website handles traffic and downloads. Of course, if our good friend Charlotte Henry was with us today, she would be speaking the praises of UK2.net, how they supported her site during some crazy British political thing that gave her a lot of traffic or something. And of course, during those times when most support people would not be helping people out, like on a Sunday or a Saturday, they have stepped up to the plate and helped her out and can definitely help you out. So head on over to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors for a list of offer codes available to you. And we'd like to thank the UK2 for all the support they give us here at the British Tech Network.
Great, thanks. So Stamper. Actually, when we started out this discussion, I mentioned the scene of Frank walking to the grave. Did you think that he was walking to Stamper's grave?
I didn't know, per se. I thought he might have been walking to Stamper's grave, which would have been a weird thing. I'm glad we didn't, because I liked that Stamper survived, because we had mentioned in season two, at the end of it, that basically Stamper, quote-unquote, overdosed.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about this episode is that normally whenever a character like that falls from grace, usually they try their best to come back. You know, a good character would. What I like about this one is we just see Stamper fall deeper and deeper. And I really dig that with that character, because if we take someone like a Peter Russo from season one, he fell deep like that and tried his damnedest to redeem himself. Looking at this one, like, he fell and he is continuing to fall. He has yet to hit rock bottom.
Even falling in the bathtub. Wasn't that a terrible scene?
That was amazing, because what I love about that he broke his arm and said, F it, I'm powering through this.
Yes.
Just, you know, essentially made a splint. I was like, damn. But it's so amazing how much he's declined, because, you know, his fear, and I think that's what caused him to do all the things he's done, his fear is that because he's not there, that he would become irrelevant.
Right.
And that, you know, because he sees, you know, when he comes back, his position is filled by Remy. Everything is there. there really isn't room for him. And mm-hmm. I think he's afraid that because he knows Frank and though Frank cares about him and Frank will say that, you know, he knows what Frank's done and he's aware that he is, you know, if he becomes irrelevant, he doesn't have a job anymore. I mean, he'll have some type of pension maybe, but that's about it.
Yeah.
That's all he's got.
There's that scene after he breaks his arm. He basically got a call to come into the White House, and so he's getting ready. He's finally going to get a chance to talk to Frank and show Frank that he's ready to come back. And when he shows up, walks into the Oval Office. Frank wants him to lean against the desk with him, and just you could see the look on Frank's face. He was so proud, and he wanted to kind of share that, like, we made it with Stamper. But he looks over at Stamper and sees him wincing in pain. But he has no idea that he just broke his arm. So, you know, that is when Frank starts to say, well, take your time. You'll come back when you're ready. But I think that he may have let him come back earlier if he didn't notice that look of pain on his face.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, really sad. Definitely, because the thing is that, you know, even before, and notice, of course, before, you know, all that, like when he was in the hospital, Claire came to visit,
mm-hmm.
and Claire, her first concern was, all right, what the heck happened to Rachel?
Yeah.
And all that was taken care of, all that was cleared up, you know, no one knows, we'll find out soon, you know, soon mm-hmm. enough. But what I like is that was the concern, was mm-hmm. that, you know, I'm here not because, I mean, I'm here, of course, to say hi, you mm-hmm. got the flowers, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Here is exactly what you're going to say to the police.
Mm-hmm.
And Stamper's right on page, right on the book, as he gets interviewed by the police, tells him all the details as to why he was there and that kind of stuff. And it's crazy to see that happening, but I'm glad to see that happening. Because, again, like what I love about this whole arc now is just seeing him decline, seeing him get into that. Because, you know, when we were introduced to Stamper, we didn't get introduced to him at rock bottom. Like, you know, with Russo, we got introduced to him at rock bottom. We're now seeing Stamper get to rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It is already beginning a journey. I mean, he is, you know, he goes to get his arm fixed. They give him, you know, Percocet. He's about to speak up, and he's like, say something? No. You know, he takes it, you know, right away, does it. You see him already, you know, drinking liquor from a freaking syringe. I mean, we are, you know, during some weird sex things, like we are in, you know, we are now learning, you know, Stamper's, you know, personal hell,
mm-hmm.
and we have still yet to really reach the lowest depths of that hell. We have yet to reach the ninth ring, and I'm kind of excited in a very weird way to see how far we go in Stamper, you know, how bad it gets.
Mm-hmm.
How hard it's going to get, because, I mean, this character's hit hard.
And we talked about this last season. We talked about Stamper and how, you know, he's obviously he's got this addictive behavior, and he transferred alcohol over to Rachel.
Yep.
But he also, I think we both kind of connected or talked about how he's such a determined, hardworking guy, and so he's almost sort of a workaholic,
mm-hmm.
and you can tell, like, because when Claire shows up, he sees the flowers, he comes home, and his fridge is stocked up, and there's a card, and there's this huge smile on his face, because he's thinking, good, I'm not going to lose control over that, they still want me, and he puts the card up on the refrigerator or the magnet, like, he's just
it's
so
important to him. I mean, it's important to him to have that, because we talk about addictive personalities, and you know, he's addicted to work as well, and thankfully that's not the thing that's going to kill him. But because he can't have that yet, again, he has to hit it first. He has to hit rock bottom. He has to get there before he can have it, and that's sort of the addict cycle.
So if he loses this work, you know, you can tell he's terrified. He's terrified.
Oh, yeah.
What is he going to be?
Highly terrified.
Yeah.
And for me, what I like about it is just because, you know, Stamper always liked his character. I always liked him kind of getting things done and stuff like that. It's cool to see him have it be at his weakest because he's been a strong character throughout the whole series. You know, season one, he was very strong. Season two, he started declining. But now we're definitely seeing him at his weakest. And I'm really curious as to what the writers will do and how they'll present him as a character and how they'll show that, because I hope he redeems himself. You know, I really want him to come back and such. I'm glad he's still alive, so it's already a plus. But to know that even getting beat almost to death wasn't rock bottom enough for him, that's impressive. And that's what I'm curious as to then, well, what happens next? Because they're already, you know, like we're talking about like last season, how it was just random to have that weird depravity act between Meacham, Claire, and Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the depravity thing with Stamper is, you know, at this point, is totally okay in story. And I'm really curious as to how deep he gets. Mm-hmm. Just knowing all the things that Stamper has done in the past, and now that we're seeing sort of the attic Stamper, the Stamper we never got introduced to.
Right.
I am really curious.
Right. Story-wise. You know that there's no way he would have called in the prostitute who looks like Rachel, that he always goes for, and then the starting the drinking if he had been able to get right back to work, I think.
Yeah.
But because he's losing that and kind of losing control, it's almost as if he's just throwing his hands up because everything is going to make it harder for him. All of the addictions that he has are just going to magnify the longer he doesn't get back to work. There's one last scene. Are you glad to see Gavin back?
Oh, yeah. Of course. I'm glad to see Gavin come back and also get screwed over at the same time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I the other thing I want to see, again, how I said in season one, end of season two, that I'm curious how they can develop Gavin.
Yeah.
I'm now really curious because now it's like, oh, you're working for the FBI. Like, get me out of here. I can't. That's part of the deal. And it's just like, oh, man. You have now the most anti-authoritative hacker that we've met so far in the series having to work for the man.
Yeah, that's just...
And knowing all the things that I know about House of Cards bringing in some reality and stuff like that into the mix...
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a time of Edward Snowden's and stuff like that, I am hoping they don't pull something like that because I don't want to see it. But if they do, I'm hoping they do it right.
Right.
Television has a weird way, even internet television has a weird way of sometimes getting hacking wrong. And so far, this show has gotten it pretty spot on. And I'm really curious, especially with a character like Gavin, who's just hates.
Wasn't that heartbreaking to see that after what he did, what he pulled off with the AT&T issue with the FBI agent Green, I believe his name is. I really thought he was in the clear after that.
No,
he's almost in a worse position.
No one cares. No one could care. Like, okay, cool, kid. I'm glad you've played pretend time with hacking AT&T.
They're never going to let him go.
No, of course not. No, not even. No, it's like, okay, thank you, you know, Gavin. Totally happy you did the AT&T. We don't care if you pull it down. They don't give a damn. Because you know what happens? Oh, AT&T goes down. Looks like they've been hacked. Mm-hmm. Oh, we've traced it back to this guy here. Congratulations, you've earned yourself a ticket to Guantanamo Bay, Mr. Terrorist.
Yep.
You know, that's it. He doesn't have a card. He never had a card. And I like the fact that he's being called on all these bluffs, and now he has to work for the Bureau in a real way, in a real capacity.
Mm-hmm. And then 9 to 5, he even has to report to
his own private hell. And I'm curious to see. And only because I see the trailer and there's that moment in the trailer where you see him kind of smashing things, I really want to know what the moment's going to be when he just cracks.
Mm.
He just loses it because he knows that he's on the side that he hates the most and there's nothing he can do about it.
At least previously he got to work from home with his hamster or guinea pig.
Guinea pig, an animal. Yeah. You know,
right.
He had the comforts of rock music. Now he's got to go to a job in a suit with a tie. Oh man, I'm so excited for this. I am so excited to just see, because I know how that can feel, and I am so curious to see him just get the moment of just like, only because I think the trailer, just where he's just like, forget this, and just smashing them. And it's at the Bureau. It's yes. not like, oh, he's like, he's going to learn things that he wasn't even aware of.
Right.
You know, there's going to be some like NSA stuff come his way. He's going to learn some stuff that
going to make him more anti-government.
Yes.
You know, he's going to hold more hatred yeah. towards this whole system.
Oh, it's be so
yeah,
great.
You're absolutely right. I hadn't so thought of that.
Because there's going to be that moment. He's going to, you know, only because I see the trailer, but even then, just knowing, like, he's going to crack.
Yeah.
I want to know what's going to break it. I want to know what's the straw that's going to come in that's just going to just destroy everything he had, and just, he just says, for, you know, forget the world. I'm bringing it down with me. And I'm so curious as to what that moment's going to be.
Yeah.
And I'm also curious as to how that'll affect the entire storyline, for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad he's back. Also, I'm glad Stamper's back, because I liked his character. However, I gotta say, I was a little bit disappointed when it was quickly revealed that he's gonna pull through. You know, it was like, oh, come on. Because when we recorded the last episode of season 2, there, you know, one of the last scenes we saw of Stamper was him on the ground with his eyes open. So right. I said, well, obviously he's dead. I thought that when I watched it, but then I saw this episode before we finished recording the last, so I knew. I just went with what my notes said, because I didn't want to spoil it for you. That you know, the whole time I wondered, is he really dead? But he was, you know. So that was kind of sneaky, the way they pulled that on us.
It makes sense. I mean, I'm glad they did in the end of it all, because we now get to see really this character hit rock. Because again, I thought that was rock bottom.
Yeah.
You know, if I got beaten to the bloody pulp, and survived, I'd say, you know what, maybe this is a sign from the heavens. I shouldn't do this.
So what do you think? What is your prediction with Stamper? Do you think he's going to quickly come back? Do you think he's going to get worse?
No. This is going to be a multi-episode arc of him going deeper and deeper, because he just hasn't hit it yet.
Yeah.
Once he hits rock bottom and realizes everything, he'll probably come back. I hope, if there's time, but he hasn't hit rock yet. Like if he's at a point now where he is, you know, having sex with prostitutes as they take syringes of Jack and just spray it in his mouth.
That's
on a different level of effed up. Like, that's on some other, like, okay, you've got a kink that you've got to get through and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
We are not at the bottom yet. This is already happening now. I don't even want to know what are the kinks are going to come into play, because that's when we'll learn. Once he has realized, oh, crap, what have I done? That will be when we get the normal Stamper back. But because this is the cycle of things,
mm-hmm.
he's got to bottom out. He's got to have either lost it all. Something has to happen before he clicks in. It hasn't happened yet.
Last question, quick one. How far are you into the season now? Did you just stop with...
Just episode 1.
Are you going to do episode by episode like last time?
Yep, that's my mission.
I'm gonna keep
the flag bearer of the series, be episode per episode, and be that, you know, that person.
I envy
supports
you.
It.
I envy you, because
it's okay. It's fine.
My thing is that I'm trying very hard to stick with each episode and not go too far ahead when I talk about it. So that's the only challenge for me. But I'm also, there was no way I could stop. You knew me well.
Oh, so. I know. I'm well aware. So
Roberto, where can people find you?
Oh, it's easy. Just find me at Vincent Forrest Report on the Twitters. And if you want to catch any of my other podcasts, head on over to cosmicradio.tv. What about you, Jackie?
JackieHearn.com. I do some other podcasts, including one on Better Call Saul. It's called mm-hmm. Lawyer Up. So you can find that on the iTunes and on Stitcher. Just Lawyer Up.
There you go.
All right.
So until next time.
Next time, bye.